This is the time and place for a special rule hearing on the South Dakota Supreme Court. Before we begin, I'd like to note again that Chief Justice Gilbertson is away on a family medical emergency, and he will, however, be participating in, of course, in voting and deciding whether to approve or disapprove of these proposed rules. And he will have the opportunity as well to listen to any comments that are made orally today. We have also received some written comments on one of the rules. Our usual process for going through these rules is to start with the opponent. We ask if there's any opponent to the rule, and if not, that sometimes helps to shorten the presentation if there are any proponents. The first rule to consider is the amendment to SDCL 1564A. And I'll ask, are there any persons present who are opponents of this proposal who would like to speak? All right, there's no response. Are there any proponents of this rule? Neither are there any proponents. We'll go to the second proposal, the amendment to SDCL 16.3.5.1, the notice of rule change, and this is a proposal by this court. Are there any opponents of this rule who would like to speak? Seeing none, are there any proponents of this rule who would like to say anything? Seeing none, we'll move to the amendment to, which is our third proposal, which is the amendment to SDCL 23A41-1, including days and excluding days in the computation of time. Are there any opponents to this rule? Seeing none, are there any proponents? There are no proponents, and so we'll move to proposal number four, which is the adoption of a new rule regarding medical privacy. We have received written submissions, both opposing and supporting this rule. I'll ask if there are any persons present today who would like to offer any opposition to this rule. All right, seeing none, I see that Mr. Leach is here and that he is kindly notified us in writing that he was going to appear today as a proponent. Mr. Leach, would you like to say anything?
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. I'm here this morning on behalf of the South Dakota Trial Lawyers Association. And if my voice does not sound quite like my ordinary voice, it's because I'm fighting a cold. In most cases, in cases where a client's medical condition is an issue, lawyers who represent the claimant, the plaintiff, see the client's personal, private, confidential medical records, including records of sexual history, including records of sexually transmitted diseases, including records of psychotherapy. And those records, of course, often contain the most personal, intimate, private, confidential parts of our lives. South Dakota law has always recognized that we have a policy to protect, to the greatest extent possible, the confidentiality of those records for the public purpose of encouraging people to be honest with their doctors and candid with their doctors and with their psychotherapists in order to promote adequate treatment. Now, of course, in injury claims or personal injury litigation, after we read those records, we send them to the other side. And everyone agrees on that. Of course, it's appropriate. Nothing in the proposed rule affects that principle or that procedure in any way, because the other side has the right to see them in order to sort out issues of injury, issues of causation, and issues of damage, as well as any issues of pre-existing conditions. The issue here is whether a defendant and its insurer, upon obtaining such records for the purpose of defending the claim or defending the litigation, then has a right to redisclose those records for purposes unrelated to the pending litigation. If you'd asked me whether that question even required an answer about a year ago, I would have said no, of course, the disclosure, the purpose for the disclosure, which is the pending litigation, limits what the opposing party may do with them. And the opposing party may not redisclose them because they were disclosed solely for purpose of adjudicating the claim or litigation. A series of cases, though, has convinced me that I was perhaps naive or at least uninformed about what's actually going on. And there are three cases I want to discuss very briefly. One's from Hawaii, one's from Colorado, and one's from Ohio. The Hawaii court decision and the Colorado court decision are cited in the letter that Mr. Marlowe originally sent you on behalf of the Trial Lawyers Association. The Ohio decision is more recent. In Colorado, a chiropractor who was insured by State Farm was injured in a car accident and made a claim against State Farm, her own insurance company, for uninsured motorist, under her uninsured motorist coverage. As part of her claim, she disclosed her medical records and her psychological records. Claim was settled, fine. But then some years later, one of her patients was injured, and she's called to testify as the treating chiropractor for her patient. And she's up on the witness stand. Lo and behold, the same insurance company, State Farm, is defending this case, and it begins to cross-examine her about her psychological history, which she disclosed in her own case. She later brought a claim for violation of her right to privacy against State Farm. The Colorado Court of Appeals in 1999 found that she had no cause of action. And it said that if she had wanted her psychological records to remain private when she disclosed them in the uninsured motorist claim, then she should have sought a protective order. Having failed to do that, she had no grounds to seek anything. That result seems to us backwards. People who consent to disclosure of their medical records, in my experience, believe they're disclosing them for the purpose of the case, not for any unrelated purpose later that the insurance company or defendant wishes to make of them. And the Colorado Supreme Court denied review in that case, leaving the Colorado Court of Appeals decision as the final decision. The second case from Hawaii, Brendy, also cited by Mr. Marlowe, involves the Hawaii Constitution, constitutional right of privacy, a provision not contained in the South Dakota Constitution. And essentially the issue that went up there is plaintiff's attorneys suggested they were entitled to a protective order to prevent the defense from redisclosing confidential medical information disclosed by them during the litigation. Eventually, the Hawaii Supreme Court said, yes, under our Constitution, plaintiff is entitled to such a protective order. There are a couple problems with trying to import that decision directly to South Dakota. First, of course, South Dakota's constitution does not contain such a provision. But second, we believe such a rule should exist even in the absence of a plaintiff seeking a protective order, because the burden should not be on a plaintiff in Tyndall or Belfouche or Sioux Falls to go in and say every single time, I want a protective order. This simply should be the law without putting that kind of burden on plaintiffs or on the court. And then the final case I want to mention is a case not cited in the written materials. It's a 2008 Ohio case. The name of the case is Hageman, H-A-G-E-M-A-N. The citation is 893, second, 153. This is a tort case. The plaintiff was a man who had been involved in a custody dispute. And as part of the custody dispute, he had to, his psychological records, psychotherapy records, were subpoenaed by the opposing parent. Well, that's fine. The custody matter was eventually settled. Everything's fine so far. But then the lawyer for the opposing parent gives the father's psychotherapy records to the state prosecutor and gives them to the state prosecutor because the state prosecutor is considering a criminal case against the father. The criminal case is eventually dismissed, and then the father sues the lawyer for invading the father's right of privacy by redisclosing these medical records. Eventually, the Ohio Supreme Court says in 2008 that the father does have a cause of action because there was...
Ohio Supreme Court?
Ohio Supreme Court.
Ohio?
Yes.
You said Northwest Reporter, though. I wonder if that's cited.
I misspoke.
Okay.
Northeast.
Northeast. Okay. Thank you.
893 Northeast 2nd 153.
All right. Thank you.
Eventually, the Ohio Supreme Court says the father does have a cause of action. Well, that's all fine and good, but a damages remedy for this kind of violation is not really the ideal approach for a number of reasons. First of all, damages in this kind of case would be difficult to prove. I don't know what the plaintiff plans to prove in the Ohio case at trial, but certainly it's questionable, and it's questionable whether many lawyers would take such a case and litigate it through to conclusion given the questionable damages. But another reason in addition is that the remedy is probably worse than the harm, because to make such a claim, the father has to obviously file this new case in court. His evidence is going to be the his psychological records, which were disclosed, and now he's publishing these to a jury, to a court, to the newspapers, to everybody who wants to write about it. And I think a defense attorney at trial might very well argue, well, this can't be much of a harm if this plaintiff who had his records disclosed to the prosecutor for the purposes of a legitimate investigation is willing to redisclose them to you, to the world, to everyone, simply to try to get some money for this. And so that's the background and the context in which this this matter comes before you. There are a number of objections made in the Davenport Evans letter that I want to address very briefly. And as I count them, there are five objections. Excuse me. First, the letter asserts that this matter is already covered by state and federal law. That is clearly not the case. Any state remedies that exist currently are not proving effective to address this situation. And the HIPAA matter, which the Davenport Evans letter refers to, simply does not apply in this situation, as I outlined in the letter that I faxed to you yesterday. Second, the Davenport Evans letter asserts that the proponents have provided no reasons for this change in the law. And I believe that's also incorrect. The reasons are stated in the letter from Mr. Marlowe and then have been further stated by me here today. The Davenport Evans letter says the proposed change would be confusing and potentially contradictory with current law. Again, I disagree. This proposed rule would not change anything about what records are or are not privileged, or what records may or may not be released to the other side, or how the other side may compel release of records. What the proposed rule would do is to address what happens to those records after they are released, and after the other side has them, and would provide that those records may not be redisclosed. Fourth, the Davenport Evans letter questions what the words "or otherwise" means in the proposal. And the specific context of the words "or otherwise" is found in the first sentence of the proposal. Quote, "the production of a record of a health care provider whether in litigation or otherwise, does not waive any privilege, etc. The or otherwise is intended to apply to insurance claims. Those matters are not litigated, but if they are settled without litigation, in every case I can think of, the insurance company wants all the plaintiff's records, medical records and otherwise, before agreeing to settle the claim. So the or otherwise refers to that situation.
Mr. Leach, could you can you think of some more narrowly crafted? Can you think of some more narrowly crafted language that might address the insurance claim rather than just use the word otherwise?
Yeah, what immediately springs to my mind in response to your question is the words or otherwise could be replaced with whether in litigation or a claim, comma.
Thank you.
And then the final objection made in the Davenport-Evans letter is the assertion that somehow this rule would limit cross-examination of expert witnesses, because an expert witness, the objection goes, who had testified one way in a particular case could not be impeached with the witness's prior testimony as effectively if this rule is enacted. And in thinking about this objection, I tried to think whether I've ever had a claim in which an expert witness, for example, if the claim's made by Jane Doe, I tried to think whether I've ever had a case in which an expert witness has been cross-examined based on medical records of John Smith. I couldn't think of any such case, and it seems a little far-fetched. I'm not sure how John Smith's records would be relevant to a claim by Jane Doe. So I don't see that there's really anything, I don't think that objection really makes sense. I can't make it match up with my actual experience, and I can't make it match up with any kind of common sense approach to how these work.
Wouldn't their testimony be part of some other proceeding, the record on some other proceeding anyway?
Yes, the actual testimony would be.
You know, the only example I thought of, we've had some malpractice cases where experts have been cross-examined after saying, I've never seen such a thing. And then they bring in another case where they've testified where they have seen such a thing. And that's, of course, not, well, that would be, I suppose that might be what they're getting at here.
It could be. I think Justice Meyer Henry's comment, if I'm understanding, is to the effect that such testimony would be part of the record anyway. The transcript of the testimony where the doctor says, yes, I've seen such a thing.
But not depositions. I mean, depositions in South Dakota aren't filed unless there's special requests, so those would not be.
They would not be part of the court file, true.
Mr. Leach, are you aware if any other jurisdiction has enacted, either by court rule or legislation, a rule similar to this one?
I'm not. The cases that I'm aware of on this subject are the three cases that I've discussed today.
Would this rule create a cause of action?
I think it may create a cause of action. I think it probably does. But that's certainly not the intent of this. As long as lawyers and their clients follow the law, they're not going to have a claim made against them. If this is enacted, if this is adopted, and they willfully choose or choose not to follow it, and they're caught, then they may have a claim made against them. But I'm certainly not here trying to, create another way for lawyers to sue for money. If that were my intent, we'd just stay silent and bring some kind of personal injury claim.
Anything else you'd like to say?
Nothing else. Just thank you for considering this. I appreciate your attention and questions this morning.
Any other questions from anyone? All right. Thank you, Mr. Leach.
Thank you.
Is there any other proponent who would like to speak on this rule? All right. That concludes our hearing then. Court is in recess.